The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we had gotten carried away a bit, perhaps, with the numbers of arthropods as compared with the other organisms that we find in the world. And perhaps all that we talked about is not of interest to those who don't happen to be interested in insects or arthropods. But just the fact that they are in such numbers, the fact that there are twice as many arthropods as everything else, that there are almost, we have 900,000 insects, then there is an insect for all the other kinds of the organisms, arthropods as well as trees and what have you. And other than simply a matter of interest, perhaps that is not particularly important. But let's look now at what we're talking about when we talk about arthropods. What are these organisms? We've looked at the characteristics. We've seen that they have an exoskeleton. The exoskeleton is of a material known as chitin. Chitin, interestingly enough, is the same basic molecule that glucose, the sugar that is present in most food, is, except that there are some amino groups that are attached to it. Chitin is a nitrogenous polysaccharide. It is a very stable material, very tough, excellent for protecting the body of the arthropod. I can recall on some of my treks in the woods of seeing waste material that has come from an animal like a raccoon or something else. And what's interesting is that they had eaten crawdads or other insects, and the rest of the body had digested, and yet here was this material that had been left on the floor of the woods or the forest, in some cases for years, and still the chitin was there. There are not many organisms that have the abilities to break it down, and there are not many enzymes that can do that. Those of you that live along the seashores probably would see crab shells or lobster shells or other remains of organisms like that will stay there almost forever because they're so stable. So that's one of the characteristics. And to me, it is simply evidence of the fact that God in his wisdom created a material that is ideally suited for what it does, namely protecting the organisms. We talked about the jointed appendages, the jointed foot that all of the arthropods have, an appendage that is in sections that can be bent, and we talked about some others. Now, let's talk about the kinds of organisms that are included in the phylum Arthropoda. There are three subphyla. Let me stop here for just a moment to talk about the matter of classification, if there are some of you that are knowledgeable about that. Here, as is true in many cases of classification, you can find almost as many many examples of classification as you do classifiers. And I would not argue over that unduly. I know the one I'm using, the one that I use in my classes often. But according to this classification, in the phylum Arthropoda, there are three basic subphyla. These are smaller categories within the phyla that will then contain other groups of organisms. And it is on this basis that we'll talk about these a little bit. The first of these would be the subphylum Trilobita. These, of course, are the trilobites. If you have been to museums, you may have seen trilobite fossils, fairly complicated organisms. The ones that we have here in the United States usually are an inch and a half long, not particularly big. We have one in our display case at the university of one that came from Libya that is about 4 inches long, a huge thing. But they have exoskeleton, they have a number of body sections. The evolutionists often try and argue that the trilobites were ancestral to the rest of the arthropods, the insects in particular. The difficulty with that, of course, is the fact that the trilobites are much more complicated than the insects are. They have more pairs of legs, for example. They have more body segments. And the fact is that the trilobites just sort of sit there in the fossil record. There's really nothing that leads up to them. There's nothing that leads away from them. So they're unique. I have a perverse desire, perverse wondering, if somewhere on the earth there may not be some trilobites left, as we've seen the coelacanth, the lobe-finned fish that was supposed to have died out 350 million years ago, and which some are still alive, has been testified to by the fact that they've been caught. Don't know whether any left alive or not, but it seems to me it's possible. And I would dearly love to walk into an evolutionist gathering sometime with some fossil trilobites along with some live ones. Probably won't happen, but it's still interesting. So the trilobites would be one of the three subphyla. The other subphylum is known as the subphylum Chelicerata. This is because they have chelicerae. That probably didn't tell some of you much of anything. The chelicerae are simply appendages that are found on the head, and in many cases, they help the organism eat. As I'm sure you're aware, arthropods do not have lips or flexible tongues, and even with some of the insects, grasshoppers, for example, that are eating grass, things get a little messy. And so the chelicerae are simply structures that help hold the food in the mouth. Now, within that subphylum, there are three basic classes. There is the class Myrostomata, or Ziphasura. For those of you that live on the shore, these would be the horseshoe crabs, or the king crabs. And I'm sure many of you have seen these. I was not aware until recently that they really are good to eat. I have never tried them. I would certainly be willing to sometime. But some of them get to be fairly big. We have some exoskeletons in our collection of king crabs that are 18 inches long, tail a little bit longer than that, so they get to be fairly sizable. The second class, the Pycnogonida, these are known as sea spiders. I don't think most people are aware of them. I'm not sure there's much point in our spending a lot of time talking about them. But the next class, the last class of the chelicerates, is the class Arachnida. Now, these organisms can be separated from the rest of the arthropods by virtue of the fact that they have four pairs of legs, and they have two body segments. One is a cephalothorax, a section which is the head and the thorax in one unit, and then the abdomen. So the arachnida include organisms that have eight legs and two body sections. They include the scorpions. We're going to come back and talk about these individuals a little bit later, but again, I would expect most of you to be familiar with these things. These are organisms that you want to treat kindly, and if you have been stung by them, why, you're well aware of the fact that you just assume not be. We've talked about the effect of venomous arthropods, and when we were talking a long time ago about snakes and other poisonous things. And the fact is, there are more people who die each year from bee stings, for example, than there are snake bites. But these are organisms that have venom. All of the venom, as far as I'm aware, are all proteins, which they will manufacture within themselves and have the ability to inject, either to kill their prey or for defensive activities or whatever. The scorpions that we have here in South Carolina, usually a couple of inches long. I have some scorpions in plastic on my desk from Africa. These things are about 4 inches long. Now, you look at that stinger, and I'll guarantee you wouldn't want to sit on it. Out in the west in our country, we have some scorpions that would get to be 2.5-3 inches long sometime. So they are venomous. There is an order known as the Pseudoscorpionida, false scorpions, which I think are not of much interest. An order that is of interest is Araneae. These are the spiders, and we'll have occasion to talk in some detail about those. They are arthropods, which means they have 8 legs. They also have a cephalothorax and an abdomen, but they also have the capability of producing a venom. Now, here, as is often true with the arthropods, it's well for you to know which end of the thing to watch out for. If we're talking about a scorpion, you want to watch out for the back end. That's on the whip. That's where the stinger is. In the case of the spiders, they will bite. So you want to be sure to be careful when there is the possibility of that. Here in this country, we have two poisonous spiders, the black widow and the brown recluse. And I'm convinced that the brown recluse is responsible for a good many more deaths than black widows are. But that's another subject. Then there is another minor order known as sun spiders, the Salpugidae, which we will ignore. And finally, the order Acarina. These contain the ticks and mites. And ticks, of course, are one of the hosts for some of the diseases. We've had several that have come to be of some importance in recent years, Legionnaire's disease and some others that we'll talk about. So these are simply examples of those organisms that we find in Arachnida. Now, the third subphylum is known as the subphylum Mandibulata, and these are organisms that possess mandibles. They have chewing mouth parts, or at least some variation of them. The major groups here, the class Crustacea, and there are a number of these are all aquatic and marine. Well, excuse me, there are some terrestrial crustaceans as well. But these are such things as seed shrimp, the ostracods, and the water fleas, copepods. These often are a food for other organisms. They're important for that reason. The Cirripedia, barnacles, again, those of you who live on the beach have probably had some rather intimate association with these when you've gotten scraped or skinned by them. The Molaccostraca, these include the pill bugs, what we call roly-polies, or at least my sons used to, and the Isopoda and the Decapoda include the lobsters and the crabs. Then you have the insects, you have the centipedes, Chelopoda, the millipedes, Diplopoda, and then two rather, for most part, insignificant groups known as poropods and the Symphyla. Now, we're going to spend a little bit of time looking at the more important of these groups on later programs, but I thought it might be well for us simply to take a survey so we'd have some idea of the variety of organisms that we would find in this particular phylum. And, of course, all the organisms in the phylum would have to have the phylum characteristics. So God chose to make a large number of organisms that have similar characteristics, and yet there are many very interesting variations. And these testify again to the fact of a creator, not to the notion that they somehow have managed to evolve from other organisms over a period of millions and billions of years.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.